Baruchim Habayim. Welcome everybody. We're about to begin tape number 13. This evening's lecture is going to be directed both towards the parents of teenagers who they consider rebellious and towards parents of teenagers who, the Hillel Kel Yisbarach, present no problem to the parents, to Yiddishkeit, but rather, as parents, we would still love to find ways to give the children an even greater geschmack, an even greater enjoyment in their learning. And this evening's lecture will describe an approach that's useful in both cases. One of the major principles of our philosophy at Project Rejuvenation is that the primary difficulty, the primary obstacle that society poses towards bringing up a Ben Torah is not pritzus, decadence, although that's a pretty big obstacle in and of itself. It's not the fact that parents don't have a lot of time for their children, although that's an obstacle too. The greatest obstacle towards bringing up a Ben Torah today is the fact that society is assaulting our children with a powerful bombardment of what we call re'iyo, sensory input, as opposed to intellectual input, which is called shemiya. For those of you that were never here before and don't know of the principle, I'll make it quick because it's a review. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with the Luchos, he saw the Jews worshipping the Egel, and he broke the Luchos. Now, the question is, why did he wait until he saw the Jews worshipping the Egel before he broke the Luchos? Didn't Hashem tell him before he went down that your nation is worshipping the Egel? Why didn't he break the Luchos right then and there? And there's an answer by the Sefer HaIkrim, Reb Yosef Albo, that the effect, the emotional effect, that Hashem's word had on Moshe Rabbeinu, although we can well imagine how great an effect that was not nearly as great as the effect of Moshe Rabbeinu's seeing with his own two eyes the Jews worshipping the Egel. Now, the point here is not that Moshe did not believe Hashem. He believed Hashem not 100% but 1,000%. The point is that it was merely intellectual knowledge when Hashem told him that the Jews are worshipping the Egel. And intellectual knowledge, even if the knowledge comes from Hashem himself, the Ribbono Shel Olam, it only has a certain amount of effect on a person. No matter how great that effect is, and don't forget we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, who was a very attentive student, it's not nearly as great as the effect of a sensory picture. And when Moshe saw it, it's not that he now believed it or now realized it. Now it hit him like a sledgehammer. The picture of the Jews worshipping that Egel and that emotional experience is what induced Moshe Rabbeinu to break the Luchos. That's the principle that the Sefer HaIkrim says. And in short, in Lashon HaKodesh, Ein Odomeh Shmiya L'Re'iyah. Intellectual knowledge cannot be compared to sensory perception. That's the words from the Sefer HaIkrim, and it's a review, we've said it here before, and it's one of the primary principles upon which Project Rejuvenation is based. Society nowadays assaults our children with re'iyo, sensory input, whereas we teach Torah, and like Hashem teaching Torah, that's Shemiyah. Now, this evening we're going to have a new application of this principle, a new danger that we all have to be aware of, but it's based on this old fundamental. Reb Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, once walked into a yeshiva, and he saw a large Beis Medrash with a few hundred bacharim and yungalite, yeshiva boys and kollel men, learning Torah. And they looked at Reb Moshe for his reaction, and Reb Moshe said, "Now I understand why we're not producing the caliber of gedolim like we used to produce in the olden days." They asked Reb Moshe, "What do you see here in the yeshiva that could make you understand that? What do you see here and now that convinces you that we're not putting out, or we're not going to put out, that caliber of gedolim that we used to?" Reb Moshe said, "Look, in that yeshiva, in the Beis Medrash, they didn't have tables like we have here in the Beis Medrash. They had shtendas. A lot of yeshivas have shtendas instead of tables, and each boy, each man gets a little shtenda for himself, and that's how they learn. And the way most people learn with shtendas is, they sit back in the chair, and they tilt over the shtenda with the Gemara on top towards them, so that the shtenda is balanced on its closer two legs, and the Gemara is right up by the boy." And Reb Moshe said, "Look, look at all of them." He said, "They take the Gemara and they bring it over to them, as opposed to they leaning over towards the Gemara. And that's a major problem," Reb Moshe said. "We wait for the Gemara to come to us, or we bring the Gemara over to us before we learn in it, rather than us leaning over towards the Gemara." That's the story that they say in the name of Reb Moshe. Now this little, seemingly insignificant event, this seemingly insubstantial observation that Reb Moshe made, that they tilt the shtenda over as opposed to leaning over towards the shtenda, doesn't seem so crucial or so terrible to us. But the truth is, when you think about it, that's just symptomatic of a tremendous machla, an epidemic, that's sweeping our entire generation. And that is this: because of the way society assaults us with sensory messages, as opposed to intellectual ones. And again, I'm going to be brief because we've already established this principle previously. Society nowadays, when they want to give us a message, when they want to convince us to buy a product, when they want to convince us to vote for a candidate, when they can want to convince us to give our support to a certain cause, whatever the message they want to give us, it's always given in the form of the right colors, the right shapes, the right assault on the right senses, pushing the right buttons in a person, as opposed to plain black on white, Times New Roman 12-point intellectual communication. That's the way society is. Fancy billboards, flashy television commercials, Sesame Street type learning, where the A and the B and the C jump up and do a dance. It's a dance, it's a song, it's spectacular, it's flashy. That's the way society gets our attention. Because of this, we tend to turn off our capacity to be intellectually proactive. Because all of these messages that society gives us don't require us to do any thinking, do any active listening, to be active at all. The whole idea is, don't make the customer, don't make your target audience do any work. The more work you make them do, the more they have to think in order to understand your message, the less chance you have of getting your message across. When an institution will send out a letter in the mail to solicit your funds, the letter will be designed in such a way so that you will have to do the least amount of work. You'll open that letter, not because you'll see the return address and notice that the letter comes from a worthy institution. You'll open that letter because splattered across the envelope in the front in big blue or red letters, it says, Yankel's teddy bear will not have a yarmulke this Pesach. Or it says, I want to ask you a very personal question, dot, dot, dot. You'll open it up. So far it had nothing to do with the institution, nothing to do with the cause. And you'll see the right words underlined with the right color. You'll see the most important pieces of the message just slap you in the face in the quickest way. They'll make it easy for you by giving you a return envelope or allowing you to write your credit card number there. Everything is easy for you. And when you pass by a billboard on the road, and the person who put that billboard up is trying to convince you to buy his product, they'll try to arrange the billboard in such a way to minimize the amount of thought that you have to put into it. Get the message across without making the people think. That's the idea nowadays. Get the message across without making the people think. That's Sesame Street learning. Teach the kids without making them have to think. Let them sing, let them dance, let them laugh, let them smile, and then the learning will penetrate. But that they should have to think actively, chalila v'chas, because then it's harder to get the message across. The problem with this is that we tend to carry this attitude over into our learning. We live in a world where intellectualism has turned into entertainment. Knowledge is acquired through your being entertained by that knowledge. Emotional and sensory stimuli are what motivate people nowadays, as opposed to intellectual reasoning. And if you ask mechanchim in classrooms, they'll tell you that children nowadays are able to tell you their feelings on almost any issue. But to articulate an intellectual analysis of an issue, forget it. What do you feel about this, you ask your little Yankala? What do you feel about what President Clinton is doing? That's what they ask them today in the schools. What do you feel about this? Today our feelings become supreme, all-powerful. Chalila, that you can't hurt somebody's feelings. And chalila, to try to change somebody's feelings. If a person feels a certain way, then that's their eternal divine right. It's no wonder we feel this way. Because that's the way society is nowadays. Intellectual knowledge is conveyed through entertainment, through feelings. And this has taken its toll in the classroom. By the Yidden and by the Goyim, Lahavdil, they'll all tell you this. Children nowadays can tell you how they feel about anything, but the thinking process, the ability to analyze, ruthless objectivity, that's a lost art. When it comes to the Beis Medrash, all this spells trouble. Because when you want to understand the Gemara, we don't care if you feel that Rava or Abaya has a better case. And it matters not if you feel Tosfos' kasha is not difficult. And nobody cares what you feel about the Marsha's teretz. You need the intellectual objectivity and the capability of making an intellectual analysis in order to learn. There will come a time Vavoyneseinu harabim. Rachmono litzlan.
One day in the future, where at a shir, people will express different opinions in the Gemara, not by saying, Rava holds this way and Abaya holds this way. They'll say, well, Rava feels that Yir Shaloi Midas, that this halacha is like this, and Abaya feels that the halacha is differently. There will come such a time. Hashem Yishmarenu. That's the direction we're going in. It's a tremendous obstacle to raising a Ben Torah. The Chazon Ish, in his Sefer Emunah U'Bitachon, writes that this entire life is a war between the Seichel, which means intellect, and Dimyon, which means feeling or illusion or impression. We give so much power to impressions nowadays, and very little power, very little credence to intellectual analytical ability. Let's go further. The greatest Yetzer Hara, the greatest particular type of distraction for our confused youth nowadays is no longer the pizza shops, is no longer the pool halls, although that's still there also. Pizza shops aren't good enough anymore, and the pool halls aren't good enough either. Nowadays, what a rebellious teenager will do is he'll go with his friends on a Motzei Shabbos to the nightclubs. And in certain circles, that's what separates the men from the boys, or the women from the girls. The little girls in the 9th grade, in the 10th grade, they'll go to a pizza store, they'll go to the pool hall. The really cool ones, the really daring ones, the ones who have graduated already and have matured, quote unquote, go, as they call it, clubbing. Now, I'm sure none of this evening's audience was ever in such a place. I'm going to describe to you the attraction that these places have for our children, because it's so paramount, it's so important that we all understand what it is out there in that silly, nonsensical world that has such a hold on our children's lives. This is what it is. You walk into a place like that and your mind shuts off. All your senses, your audio and visual senses, are assaulted, are overwhelmed by sound, heavy, loud sounds, music, sort of, flashy, colorful lights, and an atmosphere and an environment where the brain no longer works, no longer needs to work. It's the emotions, it's the feelings, it's the senses. Feeling, the seeing, the touching, the hearing, the smelling. That's what's in control now. If you ever noticed, thinking is not one of the senses. It's two different parts of a human being. Seeing, hearing, smelling, feeling, tasting. That's what's being stimulated in this environment, to the point where thinking is no longer important, it's no longer necessary, it's superfluous. It's silly even. And this stimulation is very effective. Our children's senses are overwhelmed. What they're doing with the billboards, what they're doing with Sesame Street, what they're doing all over society is magnified a thousandfold and multiplied to the 50th power and focused into one little narrow type of diversion, one little narrow type of distraction, one little narrow type of piece of leisure, and it's called our clubs. Our children go there, And when you come out, thinking is almost silly. Learning Torah becomes mundane, boring, uninteresting, because it doesn't stimulate those senses the way the lights and the sounds do. Now, of course, a kid goes in there once and comes out, that doesn't mean he's going to burn his svarim. But this should serve as a mashal for society at large. And if we want to overcome these obstacles, whether your children go there or not, no matter what your children are involved in, hopefully they're not involved in any of this stuff, but to whatever degree they're involved in, you should know that this is what the involvement is. Whatever attraction the outside world has for them, this is the major attraction. Sensory input, as opposed to intellectual reasoning, the danger of which is that it gets people used to not thinking, and it makes thinking boring and uninteresting. Their mental muscles atrophy. They're not interested anymore in it. And you know what? I'll give you another example from all the way on the other side of the spectrum. Let's say you go to a shir. You see a big poster outside and you say, you see, so-and-so, guest speaker, weekly speaker, at such and such place, such and such year, and you go and you come out, oh, it's wonderful, it was marvelous. You know, people go to shiurim nowadays the way, with the same attitude that people go to listen to Mordechai ben David or Avram Fried. They come and they say, okay, Magid Shir, whoever you are, let's hope you're a great speaker. Let's hope you say the right words. Let's hope you make an impression on me. Let's hope I like what you say. How many times did you go out of a guest shir and say, oh, I loved this person's lecture or this person's drasha? Now tell me, is the point of a drasha that you should love it? Or that even that you should like it? Isn't the point your enlightenment? The closest thing to loving it is inspiration. But isn't Torah knowledge main goal? You hear people going out of these massive lectures nowadays and say, you know, the speaker was so informative. The speaker taught me so much. You don't hear that. You say, I love that speaker. Those are your senses talking, not your intellect. You know, it says that it takes a Rebbe 40 years to get through to his Talmidim. You know what that means? That means, like Rebbe Akiva's Moshul of the Rock. You have Rebbe Akiva's rock, and the water drips and drips and drips and drips on the same spot. And after a long time, it makes an impression. Now, what would happen if every week there would be a guest dripper, a guest sink? This one would drip on this spot, and this one would drip on the next spot, and this one would drip on a third spot. You'd have a wet rock, but it wouldn't make a dent. We go from shear to shear, the way we go to, the way we listen to our records and the way we listen to songs, to be, of course, in a spiritual way, entertained, but it doesn't make a dent. Asei l'charav. Means you got to work on the same thing for 40 years, or at least more than one week, and then goodbye. The last time you went to a big lecture, how long was it before you stopped thinking about it? Whatever theme it was that the speaker spoke about, how long did you work on that theme? How long did you continue thinking about it? Until next week when the next speaker came. Well, that's re'iyo. That's sensory input. Yes, it's kosher and even meritorious sensory input as opposed to the nightclubs. Lahavdil elav havdolos. But it's the wrong part of us that's being stimulated. Or it's not enough that this part of us should be stimulated. This is the way society is all over. This is what we have to overcome. And before we explain how to overcome it, how to instill within our children that love for learning, that cheshek, that enthusiasm that they need in order to survive in this society and grow up to be B'nai Torah, how to combat that assault on Torah learning that's taking place in society, how to fight against the atrophying of those muscles that we need to learn Torah and to become a Ben Torah. I want to tell you that this isn't the first society that's mounted such a type of assault on Yiddishkeit. It's Chanukah this evening, Rabbeisai, and so it shouldn't come as a surprise that the villains of this evening's lecture, historical division of this evening's lecture, are the Misyavnim. Lahashkicham Teirasecha ulahaviram mechukei ritzaynecha. Two things they wanted to do: make Jews forget Torah, and to separate the Jews from the chukim of Hashem. The Chasam Sofer writes that Torah is harder to remember than anything else. The reason why Torah is harder to remember than secular knowledge is because Torah doesn't belong here on this world. Torah comes from Hashem, and it's not a physical thing. When you try to schlep it, pull it down to this world, it resists. And so you have to put in an effort to keep hold of it. The way we make this effort is by learning Torah with the enthusiasm necessary to elevate ourselves above and beyond this mundane world. Bring ourselves up to the level of the Torah. Ala Reb Moshe's Vort. The Misyavnim wanted us to learn Torah the way we learn science, the way we learn math. If you do that, you're guaranteed to forget it. That proactive effort that's needed in order to learn Torah that we've been discussing thus far is what the Misyavnim wanted to eliminate from the Jews. You can learn science, you can learn math just by sitting there and reading it. But in order to learn Torah, that proactive effort is a necessity. Once you eliminate that, Torah is just forgotten. Once you stop thinking, once you arrive at the Gemara and say, okay Gemara, let's see what you have to offer. Okay Rav, let's see what you have to offer. That's what was happening then. The Torah is just forgotten. You can maybe learn political science that way. You can maybe learn history that way. Have somebody stand up there and entertain you with his history lesson. And maybe you'll remember it. But it doesn't work that way with Torah. Misyavnim wanted to take the Jews and inject an element of trefa physicality into Jewish life. The gymnasiums, the whole philosophy of the Misyavnim was that of physical action as opposed to intellectual. In their own way, without the Madison Avenue magicians that we have today, they wanted to stop the Jews from thinking as hard as they need to think and from putting in the effort that they need to put in order to learn Torah. That's the first half. Lashkicham Torasecha. And you know what the second half is? Because you tell me, if a person stops thinking about Torah and he just sits there and, well, whatever part of Torah turns him on, he'll accept. Whatever part of Torah doesn't turn him on, okay, so this doesn't turn him on. He'll go somewhere else. The first casualty of such an attitude are the chukim. Those parts of Torah that we don't understand. Even the most intellectually proactive, enthusiastic Talmud Chacham can't understand the reasons behind the chukim. But at least you know that it's the Ratzon Hashem. If somebody's attitude towards Torah is, okay Torah, turn me on. Show me what you have to offer. I'm sitting here, I'm not coming to you. My brain is not going to work. You impress me. Do you think the chukim are going to impress anybody? Maybe choshen mishpat. Maybe the laws of Geneva, the laws of Lashon Hara will make an impression. Because that's things that are easily digested, easily understood. But the chukim have no chance. Hashkicham teresecha ulahaviram michukei retzaynecha. The Chidushei Harim said that the great enemy of Torah is hergel, is habit. When you remove the spectacular element from Torah, when you remove the love of Torah, the enthusiasm that the Jew has to have for Torah, and you leave with it the Jew that sits back and says, okay, Torah, turn me on, that's it, you've lost the war. Hergel, that's what it is. If Torah becomes mundane, if Torah doesn't loses its element of thrill, that's hergel. It's the opposite of thrilling. Ad shetichla regel min ashuk, says the Chidushei Harim, it's that the shear for lighting Hanukkah candles is until the people are off the street. But ad shetichla regel min ashuk means literally until the legs are off the street. But regel, he says, comes from the word hergel, which means habit. It means our job on Hanukkah is to eliminate habit from our avodas Hashem. Shemen zayis olive oil, it says in the Gemara, is good for the memory. It helps you remember Torah. Says the Chidushei Harim, that's what it is. Do you know what you remember? Something that's spectacular to you, that's what you remember. That's what Hanukkah is about. It was a war between the Jews and the Misyavnim on this very issue. Whether we treat Torah mundane or we're excited, enthusiastic about it. Whether we have a proactive approach towards learning, whether we're thrilled by it, or whether we sit back and say, okay, Torah, you thrill me. Oh, the Chafetz Chaim once said a vort. There's a mission in Pirkei Avos that describes the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Among these Talmidim were the greatest Tanoim of their age. One of them, and according to the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, he was one of the greatest, whose name is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkinus. His virtue, it says, was that he was a bar sud she'enoi ma'abed tipa. He remembered everything he learned. And the Chafetz Chaim asks, why is that a virtue? Sure, it's a virtue. It's a virtue of Hashem, because Hashem gave him a good memory. Not a virtue in Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkinus. He was born that way. Photographic memory. Bar sud she'enoi ma'abed tipa. He's like a cemented pit that doesn't lose a drop. What does that have to do with him? If a person is chosid, if a person is tzaddik, if a person is yorei chet, if a person is righteous, so then that's a virtue that he worked on. But if a person has a photographic memory, why should that be listed as a virtue? And says the Chafetz Chaim, no. That's not what it means. He relates a story, the Chafetz Chaim, how one day the king of Poland went through the town of Radin. Now Radin is a town where the Chafetz Chaim lived, and it's a very small town. So small it's not on the map. It's not on the map. And most of the people that lived in Radin were, I guess you call them peasant class. And the furthest thing from their life experiences was seeing a king. When they heard that the king of Poland was coming through their town, for months they prepared. And the tailors started weaving special clothes for the people. And the people who made jewelry started making special jewelry for the occasion. The streets were cleaned. Signs were put up. Welcome King. Well, however they used to do it. And then one day the king came through town. Just a little. He just passed through. He didn't stop by. It was like a fantasy, a dream world for these people. The king doesn't come alone. You heard of all the king's horses and all the king's men? They accompany him wherever he goes. The white horses with the braided hair in the back, and the gold chains all over them, and the fancy gold and silver carriages, and the men with the trumpets come first to announce the king's arrival, with the beautiful, fancy, glittering uniforms, and the meticulously groomed hair. And then, after the whole entourage, comes the king in his carriage. And the people in the back were jumping on the shoulders of the people in front of them to be able to catch a glimpse of the king. And the parents were holding up the babies like this, and the little kids, so they should be able to see the king in the king's carriage, a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And then it was over. And they swept up the streets, took down all the signs, and went back to their life as peasants. Says the Chafetz Chaim, those little kids that were held up by the parents, you could be sure that 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years later, they didn't forget one detail of that scene. They could be able to tell you over what color buttons the king was wearing, because a once-in-a-lifetime experience like that, something so spectacular, something so thrilling, you don't forget. And that was the Chedushei Harim's Vart. Hergel, habit, boredom is the enemy of memory. And so said the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, when it said that he was able to remember every drop of Torah that he learned, it doesn't mean that he was born with a photographic memory. He wasn't. He was, it wouldn't be listed as a virtue. The only way we can explain Bor Sud Sheinam Abe Tipa in the context of a virtue is if Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus did not have such a special memory. But every time that man learns Torah, the Torah was so special and so thrilling and so spectacular to him that it was like that king's entourage coming through town. And therefore he didn't forget even the most minute detail. Ms. Yavnim wanted to eliminate this element from Torah. And our job is to put it back. That's the Or Torah, the light of Torah, the flashiness of Torah. That's what Chanukah is all about. It's all about not learning, but the proper way to learn. And that brings us back to us. Now that we understand the problem, let's talk about a solution. The problem is that society is set up in a way so as to stimulate the sensory nerves on our children and ourselves, the entertainment neurons in our brains, which are in competition with that part of our personalities that need to be strengthened in order to grow up to be a Ben Torah. The way to combat this is in our homes, and again, it doesn't matter if you have a child who frequents the Saturday night nightclubs or a child that's learning Torah and you want him to get more geschmack out of it. The rule applies across the board. In our homes, we have to present Torah as being spectacular and thrilling. We have to really believe and understand how spectacular and thrilling Torah is. And we have to be able to impart that enthusiasm to our children. And it's doable in two steps. Step number one is that enthusiasm is contagious. And rather than try to infect your children with this enthusiasm, I say infect, of course, in a positive way, you experience it yourselves, and your children will pick it up. When your husband says a Dvar Torah by the Shabbos table, does he say it with that thrill and that enthusiasm that it deserves? When he says the question, what does Rashi mean? And then the answer, now I know what he means. Is he really happy, excited, that now he knows what Rashi means? He better be. Because that's the way we're supposed to learn Torah. Without that, l'hashkicham Torah secha, it's forgotten. It could be a bucky in all of Shas, but it's forgotten. The Torah element in Torah is gone. It's now plain knowledge. But Moshe Feinstein once said, we said it over here before, that the reason why there were Jews who were, a long time ago in the United States of America, who worked so hard and were moisa nefesh and sacrificed so much in order to learn Torah, yet their children moved to Long Island and just abandoned Torah and mitzvahs, is because of one thing that these parents used to say all the time, the Shver Tzazayin Ayid. Those dirty words should never pass the lips of a Jew. They should never pass through the mind of a Jew. It's hard to be a Jew. Just try being a guy. It's not hard to be a Jew. It's geschmack to be a Jew. It's exciting to be a Jew. It's thrilling to be a Jew. Which one of these two messages are you giving over to your children? When you prepare for Shabbos, ladies, what attitude is your children, your daughters picking up? That the great mitzvah of preparing for Shabbos is a burden? In a Shabbos nikablo. It means let's go. It's exciting to be mekabel Shabbos. If your attitude towards your mitzvahs is one of burden and one of pain and one of something just to be yoitza and something to be passed with and done with as quickly as possible, what do you expect your children to think about their mitzvahs? Their mitzvah of going to yeshiva, their mitzvah of learning. If they thought, what will your children think? That if you had a choice, if you could get a dispensation from Hashem, theoretically, to make yourself potter from those mitzvahs that you consider a burden, what do your children think you would choose? If you asked your children, child, your mother, if she would be able to get from Hashem a dispensation, a heter, not to prepare for Shabbos, would she or wouldn't she? My mother! Such a pain in the neck to prepare for Shabbos. What's the question? Well, our children have so many, in their minds, they have so many dispensations not to go to yeshiva, not to learn Torah, not to do all of this stuff. That's exactly what they're doing. Our children are not always all that different than us. If the children see the parents excited about it, then they're going to be excited about it also. That's step number one. This vort comes from a sefer called Nechama Sleya, written by a yid named Reb Eitan Kobri. In Birkas HaTorah, it says, V'ha'arev no Hashem alaykenu estivrei sarascha b'finu, u'b'fiyam chabeis Yisrael. Hashem, please make Torah sweet to us and to all the Jews. V'nihiyya anachnu v'tzatzoeinu, v'tzatzoei tzatzoeinu, v'tzatzoei amcha beis Yisrael, kulonu yoydei shemecha v'loimdei sarsecha lishmo. And please make us and our children and our grandchildren and everybody's grandchildren people who know Torah and learn Torah lishmo. Now what's the connection? First we say that Hashem, you should make Torah sweet to us, and now all of a sudden we're talking about our children and grandchildren. Now Boisai, it's so clear. It couldn't be more explicit. If Torah is sweet to us, if we love it, then our children will be Talmidei Chachamim because they will love it too. It's clear that's what Birkas HaTorah is saying. And that's step number one. Now we're going to quickly go to step number two. Step number two is you have to know which Divrei Torah to say. Nowadays in yeshiva, the attitude is, and it's not a wrong attitude, Chas V'Shalom, it was espoused by great Gedolim and great Lamdonim, that when you learn, the main objective is not to learn in a way that's geschmack or that's spectacular or that's sharp, but rather in a way that's true and accurate and precise. Tyrus Emes. Now this is of course true. However, there's also a mitzvah for us to enjoy our learning. That great Goin, the Avnei Nezer, in the introduction to his Sefer Iglei Tal, writes that if you enjoy your learning, if you have a geschmack from a vort that you read or that you said, that is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of learning Torah Lishmo. The more you enjoy your learning, physical enjoyment, emotional pleasure, the more wholesome your mitzvah of Talmud Torah is. If your child is one that you feel could use a jump start in getting a more geschmack in his learning, what you should do is, at the Shabbos table, or whenever you learn with your children, or whenever your husbands learn with your children, you should find those Divrei Torah that are spectacular and thrilling and leave a smile on your face. There are such Divrei Torah. It may not be the greatest Musar lesson, it may not be the most inspirational, but the most fun it will be. There are Svarim whose brilliance is just mind-boggling. If your child has a good head and he appreciates a good piece of brilliance, you should use this to your advantage. If your child is learning Chumash Sefer Bereishis, and your child is such a type that I just described, run to the Svarim store and order a Sefer called Or Torah by the Ostrovtsa Rebbe Zatzal. I guarantee you that if your child appreciates brilliance, his mind will be dazzled. There is no description I could give you to describe how spectacular the Divrei Torah in that Sefer are. And if you're learning Gemara by the same author, Meir Einei Chachomim, 3 volumes. And there are more like that. I guarantee you, although you may find a more Musar type Vort, a more useful Vort elsewhere, you may find a Vort elsewhere that's more Alpiderech Pshat, this Tzaddik and this Goyin made Divrei Torah that's so dazzling, there's nothing like it in the world. This won't work with girls, by the way. Girls, their chinuch is such that they're not brought up bedazzled by this type of Divrei Torah. If your son's a yeshiva boy, he's just missing that little enthusiasm, but if he's a real yeshiva boy, he's going to be impressed. But the girls won't. For the girls, you need something else. Buy storybooks and find the most inspirational, tear-jerking stories of Mesiras Nefesh and sacrifice for Torah that you can find. The girls, rather than put a smile on their faces, you have to put a tear in their eye. It'll have the same effect, but in a different way. Because they're chinuch, they're brought up to be impressed by different things. If your husband has a rav, or if you have a rav, go to him. Ask him to recommend for you the right type of svarim for the type of children that you have. Different types of children are inspired and turned on by different types of Torah. You have to find the right type of Divrei Torah for your children. The yeshiva system nowadays is set up to be able to cater to only, well, to be able to maximally cater to only a certain percentage of the population. There are children out there that have a natural affinity to different types of learning that aren't the types of learning that are done in yeshivas. You can have a child that's not turned on by yeshiva because of the way yeshiva learns. And I don't mean to criticize the yeshiva. No two human beings are alike. And yeshiva can't cater to everybody. It's up to the parents. Therefore, the fathers, obviously, the fulfill their mitzvah to be machanech their children, because, by the way, even though we send our children to yeshiva, the mitzvah to be machanech our children is still ours as parents. It's not like we delegate this mitzvah to the yeshivas. The responsibility for chinuch is still ours. And we have to find the type and the style and the way of Torah that's going to turn our children on. And again, if you have a child that's running around in the streets, I don't know if any particular type of sefer is where he's holding. There's Aleph Beis before, the more advanced. But the principle is the same. The principle is the same. You have to find something in Yiddishkeit for him. Maybe a certain mitzvah that he has an affinity to. Maybe a chesed. Maybe something else. Yiddishkeit is so broad. The yeshivas have a goal to put out Gedolei Torah. Fine. But not all of our children are going to be Gedolei Torah. And for some of our children, the idea that in order to be a success in yeshiva, you have to be able to fit that mold, translates to them that in order to be a success in Yiddishkeit, you have to fit a certain mold. And because they're not in that mold, they're a failure automatically in Yiddishkeit, and who wants to be a failure? They can still be a success if we have the proper chinuch for them outside of the yeshiva. But the thing you should be looking for is the thing that's most thrilling, the thing that's most spectacular, the thing that he's most enthusiastic about, whether it be a certain style of sefer, a certain type of sefer, whether it be a certain mitzvah or a certain part of Yiddishkeit. That's what you should be doing. You have to find that part of your child. Maybe he's interested in history. In yeshiva, he's a failure. A parent once came to me like this. In yeshiva, child's a failure. He doesn't learn anything. He reads all these Gedolim books, and he has this curiosity about Jewish history. He said, you just found a gold mine. But he won't grow up to be Reb Moshe Feinstein. Make him your resident Jewish historian. Buy him as much books and encourage him and direct him in that direction as far and as much as you can. Let him be successful. Let him find the thrill someplace in Yiddishkeit. Because that's the clue. That's what we have to look for. Nowadays, the key to success, the key to plugging a child into Yiddishkeit, is giving him a thrill in it. Making it spectacular for him. It doesn't matter how you do it, where you do it, with what tools you do it, but that's what you have to do. That's your goal. Get him involved with something that's thrilling to him. May not be the biggest mitzvah, may not be the highest level of learning, but forget about that already. To him, it has to be the most thrilling, and that's the goal to push for. At this point in time, we're going to take questions. The custom here is that questions are written on a piece of paper and handed up to the front, and they'll be answered accordingly. Question. When my husband and son learn together, it always ends up as a battle of you don't know it. And yes, I do know it. My husband doesn't get a chance to even attempt to say nice Divrei Torah or impart a feeling of Geschmack. Well, you don't tell me one important piece of information. Does the child really know it or not? This could mean one of two things. This could mean the child really does know it and the father is wrong, or it could mean the father's right and the child doesn't really know it. I don't know which is true. I'm assuming now the father's right, because if the father's wrong, we know what the problem is. Usually, if a child insists he knows something and he really doesn't, it's for one of two reasons. Either because he has such low self-confidence that he can't tolerate the fact, he can't tolerate the pain of knowing that he doesn't know something, or two, in yeshiva, they try to encourage him by telling him that he knows it even though he really doesn't. If it's the second, then I would suggest that the father not compete with the yeshiva in terms of deciding what the child knows and doesn't know, because you won't accomplish anything that way. The first thing in such a case is for the father to contact the Rebbe and to find out if that's the case. Because certain children in a yeshiva's attempt to encourage them sometimes they'll instill a little more confidence in the child than he really deserves. If that's the case, then the father should go along with it. Because if he doesn't, he's just going to confuse the kid. He's not going to accomplish anything. And to change the yeshiva's attitude is not likely he's going to be able. If he convinces them, fine. But the yeshiva and the father have to coincide in this. Otherwise, nothing's going to work. It's just going to be worse. If, on the other hand, what's really happening here is that the child has such low self-confidence that he can't really accept the fact that he doesn't know it, then you have to find out why. Is the child afraid? Maybe if he admits that he doesn't know it, the father's going to say, well, why don't you know it? Maybe the father's going to come down hard on him. If the child is scared to admit he doesn't know it, then that has to change. Torah learning has to be geschmack. Torah learning has to be comfortable. If a child, you know, today children are great with computers. They learn great by computer. You know why that is? You know what the main reason, in my opinion, is? Because if you make an error on a computer, it doesn't show up on the screen, "Error, you moron." That's not what it says. It'll say, "Error, try again." And that message on the screen will come up 10, 20, 100, 200 times. It never loses patience. The computer never screams. The computer never gives its message in bold print after the first 50 times. It never loses its cool. A mistake, we try again. Children love that. It's not that you're misleading them. The computer says straight, "Error. Abort, retry, ignore, your choice." But it'll say it 1,000 times. And it'll never lose patience. That's what machanchim and parents who are being machanach their children have to learn also, patience. If, on the other hand, the child's lack of self-esteem is due to something in the child, then that problem has to be dealt with. In other words, the bottom line is that this, "you don't know it," and "yes, I do know it," problem is just a symptom of something else. Either a conflict between home and the yeshiva, or the child's self-esteem, or the child's fear. Forget about this. This isn't the problem. This is the result of a problem. Deal with that problem, and then this will be solved. Next question. Not all of us have the ability to be enthusiastic as kindergarten teachers, ready always with a song or story. What do we do? You don't have to be ready with a song or story. They say the Chazon Ish never sung in public. And I don't know that he was anything special in the story department either. But everybody knew that the Torah was his whole life. Enthusiastic doesn't have to necessarily mean volatile and sing and dance. Everybody's enthusiastic about something. Certain people's personalities are that they're very calm, they're very phlegmatic. But your children will know what's really important to you, what you're really enthusiastic about, what you really get excited about in your own way. I'm not asking you to sing and dance. I'm asking you that the Torah should be important to you, that you should care so much about it in proportion to your understanding of the Torah's value. And that importance will be carried over to your children, no matter how you express it. We discussed this before. Your children will smell out your real attitude. Yes, it's great if you could express it, but that's just icing on the cake. If a parent really loves Torah, if he's enthusiastic about it, the children will pick it up. He'll pick it up from the way he speaks. He'll pick it up from a tone of voice. He'll pick it up from the way a person's eyes light up. It doesn't have to be a song or a dance. Any other questions?